Welcome to another episode of the Compass Podcast. I'm Zach, Director of Research and Content at Compass, hosting this episode with one of my favorite people in the Bitcoin mining space, Steve Barber, CEO of Upstream Data. Upstream's a full-service mining company tapping into the enormous market of natural gas to fuel the next 2x growth multiple for Bitcoin's hash rate. Chat Steve and I have is great. I'm excited for you all to listen to it. And without any more delay, let's get started.
I hope that you enjoy this episode. If you do, please consider subscribing and leaving a review on your preferred listening platform. It really helps out the show. The Compass Podcast is presented commercial free by Compass, the number one Bitcoin mining marketplace. If you want to get started mining Bitcoin, source hard to find ASICs, or find competitively priced hosting space, then check Compass out at compassmining.io. And now, on to the show.
Steve, thanks for coming on the show. I'm glad to have some time to chat with you.
Absolutely, Zach. It's been a while. It's been a week and a half since I saw you, I guess, in Miami.
Yeah. That was a pretty crazy, but very fun week. I want to chat about a bunch of different things, but I'm mostly curious for my own personal reasons, but I think our audience would enjoy hearing it a bit too. I haven't actually ever heard your sort of Upstream origin story, how you got into the company you built now. What led you down that path of, I guess, all possible paths you could have taken in the Bitcoin industry? Can you give me like the short pitch on how you got to where you are now, where Upstream came from?
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing too crazy exciting. I'm an oil field engineer. So, when I was working my day job for oil companies, I got exposure to a lot of the problems in oil and gas production. Of course, a big problem being all this stranded energy, whether it's vented gas, flare gas, or sitting gas wells that like don't have a pipeline. So that's always been a thing, like an issue in oil field. And I guess my origin is just, I had left my job working for an oil company. I started a small business to do a downhole tool design and actually was doing okay with that. But then I got into Bitcoin. This was like 2016. And it just made a lot of sense. Bitcoin mining is so energy intensive that like 2016 or like 2013 to 2016 timeframe was where ASICs really started ramping up. 2013 especially is when they came on the scene. So it started becoming industrialized. And at that time, a lot of articles about how much energy Bitcoin uses. And to me, it just made a lot of sense. Like this is a natural, like a perfect fit for oil field where you have these remote locations and stranded energy. I just looked around to see, okay, like, is this viable? Is anyone doing it? Whatnot. And yeah, I didn't see anyone doing it, or I couldn't find any published information. So I just started doing it myself and started our company that way.
It's actually really interesting because now, I guess, I mean, we can probably credit you with starting the trend, but it's definitely a trend. Since Upstream, there have been several other similar businesses, I guess, popping up, pushing this stranded or what would otherwise be flared natural gas, and sort of harnessing that to mine Bitcoin. In my opinion, one of the more interesting trends in the whole industry, but especially mining. I'm just curious, I guess, you sort of were what you might call orange-pilled, maybe somewhat quickly and easily, and then saw the connection between, or the opportunity, I guess, for natural gas being harnessed to mine Bitcoin. As you're soliciting clients, I guess, and putting more machines at these different sites all over North America, like, are there huge like barriers sort of you have to overcome, like mentally for your clients, or are they just sort of happy that someone wants to buy this natural gas from them? Like what's that like experience like, and how do you work through it if there are those barriers?
Oh yeah, there's been a lot of barriers over the years. Though we don't actually buy gas from our clients, or that's very rare if we do that. We offer different options. I can get into that okay. later, but yeah, the mentality around it has changed a lot in say the 4 years I've been, knocking down doors, trying to get into like getting into oil companies and getting them to take our product seriously. So yeah, early on when for most companies that I approached hadn't even really heard of Bitcoin, let alone this solution. Yeah, it was a big challenge. And like a lot of the meeting would always be, okay, like what is Bitcoin? Like how does it work? Like what is mining? This is crazy, right? So early days I spent in a way, I don't know, I wouldn't say wasted, but I spent a lot of time educating. And me and at that time it was actually just me, but you know, fielding a lot of questions on like mining, just technical questions. That since doesn't seem to be the case anymore. Like now, I would say it's rare actually if we approach an oil company. And in fact, we haven't even been cold calling them lately because, well, our name's out there. So they've been calling us up. They've been calling up our competitors. You're saying how you mentioned when you started this question, how it's really taking off. Like it really is taking off in a big way. Like Crusoe Energy, GAM.AI, I could actually name like probably off the top of my head, I could name a dozen companies that are effectively like competitors to us in some form. Not always with the same business model, but like offering a similar solution. And it's really exploding, which is, I think, really underrated still. Like, I think, you know, you guys are a little more turned on to it because you're deeply involved in the Bitcoin mining space. But a lot of the Bitcoiners that aren't involved in mining probably haven't realized how much it's catching fire. And I really think that's why I'm always saying, you know, to you guys and online and stuff, like, I think oil fields is going to absolutely dominate Bitcoin mining in the next 10 years.
Well, that's sort of my next question. Like, when we're looking at, I mean, I've looked at like rough estimates, I guess they're probably a few years old, but sort of gross natural gas production in North America, and then sort of the total amount of natural gas that's flared each year. Like, when you think about like I hate to even call it a niche because like you're giving it such like a huge potential, but like that segment of like the mining market, like what's the total addressable market there? Like if like whatever the timeline might be, 3, 5, 7 years, when we're like natural gas mining is just like a mainstream trend. It's not like, what's the size of the market? Like how much hash rate are we going to see from this sort of mining?
Right now it's probably a pretty low percentage of hash rate.
When it's full scale.
First of all, like total addressable market, like Bitcoin mining is so small relative to just the waste energy and oil field that you would need 5x the Bitcoin network just to capture the existing waste energy. So that's not even sales gas. And I mean, you know, obviously oil and gas, like, you know, fuels the entire world. So there's a ton of energy being produced every day. There's a lot of wells, like a lot of people, I don't hear much about this as much. Like there's a lot of hype around flare mining, not so much hype around vent mining, which is actually what we specialize in, and very little hype around stranded gas mining. So like mining off sitting gas wells. There's like tens and tens of thousands of sitting gas wells in America and in Canada. They don't have a market. They can't get a market to them. So Bitcoin is like really the only option for a lot of these things. So the market's enormous. So like in a sense, like it's silly to say, okay, well, you know, like companies will try to pitch based on total addressable market. Like the market's so enormous in natural gas, it's not what we would pitch on. We'd say like, you know, hope like based on the trend, maybe based on optimism within 10 years, like I would venture a guess like Bitcoin mining will be, I would say at least 50% done in oil field. Hash rate will be at least 50%, but it's hard to say because, I'm seeing coal-fired power plants ramp up to do Bitcoin mining. A lot of these coal plants, are on hard times. Like in certain states, for example, like there's certain states in the U.S. where, you know, they might have been fueling like the manufacturing industries, like steel, aluminum, et cetera. And then when those industries fled to China, these coal plants, you know, didn't have much of a customer. So I'm seeing actually a lot of talk about those getting fired up. So between oil and gas and coal, I think it's going to be dominated by fossil fuels in the next 10 years, which is something people don't like to acknowledge.
Yeah, no, I want to talk about that in just a minute. But for my own sake, honestly, and also for the listeners, can you like really quickly, since we all aren't oil field engineers like yourself, break down those three different types of natural gas mining that you mentioned: flared, stranded, and I forgot the third actually, but. Could you break those down for us?
So like flaring and venting is similar. They're both wasting gas. Venting just means it's lesser talked about. It's not as sort of a serial like the image of a flare, but venting is just gas seeping into the atmosphere. So it's not getting captured in a flare. And that actually happens to quite a large extent, especially in Canada. Pretty much at every oil and gas facility, to some extent, there's a little bit of venting, whether it's small amounts from like pneumatic, or just cracking valves and stuff, or if it's like coming off a tank, or if it's actually just directly getting vented. So we go after that because it's a really big pain in the butt for the oil companies because of the regulations around it. So we like Bitcoin mining is one of the only feasible, like scalable technologies that can actually, you know, feasibly monetize that gas. And then when you have enough volume and it's, you know, certainly if the regulations are making you'll flare it. So instead of venting it, you'll send it to a flare stack, dispose of it properly. So burn it. So flaring is just disposal, right?
Gotcha.
Flaring is also a safety thing too, because certain facilities, you always have to have a lit flame in case there's an upset condition. You know, you have to send all the, say, process gas down and dispose of it because you have an upset at the facility. So flaring is like disposal and also safety. And then the other one, the biggest one, really, like the biggest potential, though there are other economic, like each one, like venting, flaring, and stranded gas have their own regulatory issues and economic issues. But stranded gas, there's an enormous amount of stranded gas just sitting gas wells, depleted gas wells, mature fields in that in the US and in Canada and actually all around the world.
Mm, interesting. Thanks. Yeah, no, that's super helpful and makes perfect sense. Now, like I want to talk about the environmental aspect of all of this. And I know like it's hard not to have sort of strong opinions on this. I know you and I and most Bitcoin miners do. Although some sort of fall on different sides of this, but like the natural gas in particular is an interesting position in my opinion, just because like absent any sort of Bitcoin mining element, like the natural gas industry is definitely no stranger to these sort of environmental like ESG concern attacks. And then you sort of add the ESG environmental concern trolling element on top of Bitcoin mining to it and just sort of compounds there. But like it gets even more interesting because like the root concern or the root issue, I guess, for these environmental type people is they want clean energy. They don't want like they don't want Bitcoin mining to sort of use any like what may be classified as dirty energy. But the way natural gas mining is working, as you've described it, is it's not using renewable energy, but there's still a huge environmental benefit if that's sort of like the end all be all goal from this type of mining. Like, I mean, this question is pretty open-ended, but like, how do you see natural gas Bitcoin miners in particular navigating this sort of like headache of environmental concern?
Yeah, it's a very nuanced topic. There's a lot we can get into. Well, for the most part, like if you're mining Bitcoin off a flare or a vent source, you're generally at the very least, not incrementally adding carbon. You're reducing carbon, especially on vents because of the methane emissions reduction. So there's one aspect is, okay, there's, you know, at least for the carbon accountants, you have reduction in carbon off this waste natural gas mining. But there's also a lot of guys, and I think it's going to increase substantially doing it off stranded gas. Or not even stranded gas. And I know lots of guys mining off sales gas. So they're just partnered with a midstream company or an upstream company, but instead of the upstream company selling their gas down the pipeline, they're selling it for more money to the Bitcoin miner. So you can argue, well, of course, it's true that if you, at least in the case where it's stranded, like a sitting gas well, if you start that up, like we started up a gas well a few months ago and started mining Bitcoin off of it, it starts to emit more carbon. So if the ESG... Mm. Like the ESG accountants like aren't going to like that, you know? So, I mean, that it is what it is. Like we can obviously talk about ESG, but the whole thing is, it's pretty biased. Like it's pretty biased against fossil fuels. The same ESG, like the same like carbon accounting methodologies that are applied to fossil fuels are not applied to the alternatives. So like wind and solar, for example, they're not having to pay a tax on their upfront in a really large amount of emissions in the manufacturing of say a solar panel, especially because you can't make it without coal as a raw material and it's all made from coal power in China. So right now it's like we're all in, like the world seems to be in this game of like pass the carbon. America, Canada, you know, we're curtailing our carbon emissions, our carbon emitting power generation like coal. We're ramping up natural gas, which has less carbon, and that's a good thing because natural gas is generally pretty cheap. But we're ramping down coal, and that's costing us in many other ways, while all it's really doing is offsetting what we would emit here, and it's offsetting it to being emitted in China, who are ramping up their coal at unprecedented rates, because yeah. that enables them to drive down their manufacturing costs. And now we're going out and buying everything, basically everything at these days from China, even in the renewables sector, like wind and solar, that's all made in China, pretty much off Chinese coal. So it's like, there's yeah. a massive level of hypocrisy. But ESG stuff, like nonsense aside, I personally am like passionate and concerned about the ESG narrative as it relates to Bitcoin, because I've seen what it's doing to the oil patch. Like, people in Bitcoin mining that don't have any experience in, say, the coal industry or say the fossil fuels industry, oil and gas, they might not just be conscious of the damage it's doing. Like, I know personally a lot of people that I've worked with that are out of work. It's very personal. It's very damaging. And really, all we're really doing is not reducing carbon. Like I said, it's just going to China. But it's not just carbon that's going to China. It's the jobs. You know, the jobs yeah. are going to China. So. And not just China, but like competing jurisdictions that aren't so fanatical about carbon. So yeah, it's a nuance. Like, there's a lot to it, and the risk with Bitcoin is, I would say you would agree, and I'd say most people into Bitcoin would agree that the environmental FUD around Bitcoin mining is the biggest attack, say, surface, or it's the biggest risk for regulatory attack on Bitcoin. And I think we're seeing it. I think we're seeing big mining companies position themselves to try to posture around being clean. Yeah. So we can talk more about that if you want.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a very contentious and nuanced issue. I mean, most things are, but some of the details you were describing, sort of how this is affecting lots of different industries, and there's a very like poignant personal element, maybe puts sort of like, I guess, like a gut feeling or like an opinion I had, maybe it makes it incorrect. But my assumption would be that like private off-grid mining companies like Upstream may be able to sort of skirt this ESG nonsense a little bit more easily than like on-grid and especially public mining companies. But based on some of the things you were saying, maybe in most cases, that's not true. Do you think like off-grid mining, especially like in various forms of natural gas powered mining, they have a little bit of an easier time with all of this whole environmental narrative, or is that not necessarily true?
I think in the long run, off-grid will have an easier time because, I mean, the facts are, especially if you're doing it on flare gas and vent gas, you're actually reducing carbon. So, but then there's some real weird stuff happening. Like in Alberta, for example, we're still trying to navigate what the regulations really are. It seems to... Doesn't matter who you talk to, no one seems to have the same answer. But like, we have some oil companies telling us that, okay, because there's different regulatory bodies, for example, in Alberta, you got the AER, Alberta Energy Regulator, that has to do with volume limitations on venting and flaring. And from their perspective, Bitcoin mining is a great thing. It's reducing emissions, reducing volumes, reportable volumes. So it's all good. But there's also another regulatory arm, which you have to report to for stationary power generation. And even though you're reducing net emissions on site, they say you have to pay a carbon tax on it because there's just a disjoint in the regulatory bodies. It's just classic regulators, like just not being efficient. But so I would say, yes, off-grid miners have a bit of an advantage, but I honestly don't think anyone's going to escape this ESG bureaucracy, really. Like, right now, I haven't had to really do anything, do much from my business standpoint. I don't expect that to last. I think there's going to be more strict regulations at some point. But like public companies right now, especially public oil companies, are having to do like sustainability reports, like ESG sustainability reports. It's this like social justice accounting system. So now they have to justify that they're good for the environment. They have to justify they're good for social and like in governance systems. It's just getting absurd. So this adds a huge cost to a business having to report to that. So it's, I don't think anyone's going to escape. And that's why I think it's important that Bitcoiners, especially, who I sort of feel like are the only people in the world that are at this point care about the truth and like, and, you know, like being reasonable and rational. You know, I'm trying to convince anyone that follows me to really push back against this because I see it. I see a lot of damage coming from this.
Yeah, I think it's very tricky, and like you've said, potentially seriously damaging. But it's also like sort of a solved issue. Like if you really care about the environment, like Bitcoin's energy blend, like as a whole, is pretty clean, cleaner in most cases in terms of like ratio of renewable clean energy to fossil fuels than a plethora of other industries. But I mean, the environmental crowd is rarely, if ever, satisfied, and the damage will keep coming.
Yeah, the problem with like, and this is a battle I'm never going to win, like it's too far gone at this point. But the problem with qualifying something as clean or dirty is completely subjective. It's a moving target.
Yeah.
There's no objective way to measure it. Yes, carbon emissions, but then, you know, they have to figure out, make assumptions for carbon equivalents. They have to make assumptions for supply chain carbon and so on and so on. It's just like, it's the second you start arguing, and this is why I'm so adamant in the Bitcoin space to stop justifying Bitcoin based on its, call it renewable mix, or call it, you know, quote unquote, sustainable energy mix or green energy mix. When you legitimize the cleanliness of something, which is completely subjective, you're setting your arguments up to fail. And
yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. So that's a battle I don't think I'll ever win. That's too far gone. Everyone measures things in clean and dirty now, but there's so much more to it than that. And that's sort of what I try to, you know, I try to enlighten people on.
No, I mean, that makes perfect sense. Like words matter, language matters. And especially when you're trying to fight against a very pervasive and like incessant narrative, like the ESG type talking points. That's a great point I hadn't really considered before. I mean, I don't want to make this conversation too sort of down and heavy, but I am curious, what keeps you up at night in terms of like worst case scenario, environmental related regulation, like what worries you the most if there was like an apocalyptic regulatory scenario that materialized? What would it look like for you?
Oh man, what keeps me up at night? Recently, a good friend, you know him, I think Ben Gagnon over at Bitfarm, sent me a link about climate lockdowns. That scared the hell out of me because it's like if someone told me about climate lockdowns say 2 years ago, I'd be like, oh yeah, right. But now after COVID lockdowns, it's like, oh my god, like, this is actually probably going to happen because it's the same elite, you know, call me conspiracy theorist and whatnot, but it's the Davos elite. It's the World Economic Forum. It's the United Nations pushing this craziness. And I think they're going to be pushing these climate lockdowns soon. It seems a logical succession from COVID lockdowns, and it's just going to fit the climate narrative that basically, well, really, we should all just kill ourselves so we don't commit more carbon. But
that's the logical conclusion there.
Yeah, it's the stuff that makes you like, you know, like little things like, you know, I'm a supplier, right? So I build things for people, and like little things like all of a sudden we can't get components that were used to be easy to get. Like that's what keeps me up at night, like worrying about hitting my deliveries on for customers, which is getting harder and harder to do for reasons that, like, of course, not to make excuses, but like when suppliers out of nowhere don't have anything because the supply chains are screwed up, it makes business really difficult. And fortunately, yeah, I end up disappointing customers. That's what really keeps me up these days.
I mean, like, I can't really disagree with what you said, that it doesn't seem like anyone's really going to have a great time escaping this narrative on grid or off grid, no matter really what power you use, depending on, I guess, some exceptions. It's going to be kind of a tough battle.
I wouldn't want to be on grid in North America. Well, let's put it that way, because they're just right now it's probably going to be fine for a while. But like, man, like they're gonna start. You know, people are gonna start clamoring for. I think if someone was posted something there recently, just about people upset about like, say, Texas grid miners using up so much electricity and saying, hey, we need this right now. Like, why are miners using it and stuff? And I don't know. It's the way things are going. I think it's going to get price inflation. We're going to see energy prices go up. I really think we're going to see oil and gas prices. Like right now, gas prices are really high for the summer. It's really crazy, actually. And that's going to affect everything downstream. Like, don't forget, like when you have an oil and gas prices go up, it's going to affect because everything is downstream of oil and gas pretty much. Like, so everything like grid power is going to go up, and everyone's sort of in the same boat. Like even, you know, producers are going to expect more money for their gas than the small amounts some Bitcoin miners are paying them today. So it's going to affect everyone. But yeah, the further you are downstream, the more susceptible that you are to being canceled effectively and like regulatory attacks and that kind of thing.
Yeah, no, I can understand that. I mean, I guess this conversation has been super fun for me. I mean, mostly because I agree with you on everything, but we see you mentioned at the beginning of our chat that there's like this huge potential addressable market specifically for natural gas powered Bitcoin mining. And then there's all of these like environmental and regulatory concerns that may materialize in different degrees of severity and whatnot. It would, you might think, prevent obstacles to sort of realizing the full potential for that market. Like, and obviously that will spill over into other types of Bitcoin miners using other types of fossil fuel energy and whatnot. So like, where's the hope, or where's the protection and shelter? How do miners protect themselves? What's the outlook, your outlook there in terms of this huge potential and all the barriers that could prevent it from being realized?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think what I would certainly recommend to miners, whether you're grid or off grid, is don't put too much capital in the like brick and mortar infrastructure. Like sometimes it makes a lot of sense to, but I mean, as things get crazier and like they start, you know, jacking miner prices up and censoring miners, I think it's a good idea to, if you can and if it's feasible, consider building like portable facilities. Of course, I say that as someone that builds and sells portable facilities, but there's a reason, you know, I say it. I think that, I mean, we actually have seen discrimination from, say, the utilities or the county or the politicians against miners in several states. Like we saw it in, I think, Wenatchee, Washington, where they started, you know, people were upset with all the Bitcoin mining and then they started jacking up their prices.
Yeah.
Like call it discriminating against the Bitcoin miners. We saw it in Quebec. We've seen it other places. So I only see it getting worse. Okay, what can we hope for? What's good and all that? I don't know. It's like, I'm very hopeful for the future because honestly, Bitcoin, I think it's so transformative. It's going to be amazing for the future. And I don't think anything is going to stop it. But I think between now and then, when we live in this Bitcoin utopia, which might take, you know, 50 years, it could take quite a while. I'm hoping it's going to happen a lot faster than anyone realizes, but there's going to be some pain in between. Like the incumbent owners, like the people that own everything right now, which is like effectively, you know, the central banks and the system, you know, the state, effectively government, state, central banks, financial institutions that own everything. Yeah, they're going to have a lot of trouble giving up what they stole. So I think there's going to be a lot of interesting battles, going forward.
I mean, there's definitely not a small amount of money in the oil and natural gas industry, though. So maybe if we get them on board with Bitcoin 100%, we can we'll have some extra punching weight, fighting weight, I guess. But
yeah, you know, and I agree completely. Like that's my business model. We try our best to sell direct to oil companies and get them to mine. One, we just think it's the best solution, like for us as a business. But two, I also like that idea because you know, they do have a lot of capital, and mining is a lot of capital. Oil and gas companies are perfect match in that regard, and it does so much to help them. But what I'm seeing now actually is, and I've sort of been seeing this for a while, but it came to a head recently with one customer. Yeah, as much as I'd like oil and gas and energy companies to go all in on mining themselves, which makes total sense, right? Because it's not that often. Like if you look at the oil industry, you know, us and everyone else that, you know, we try to limit it, but like when we bring our own equipment to their site and have some kind of service agreement with them for the gas, that's not like that common. Like, you know, you don't see compressor companies like coming in and paying the oil company for gas to sell down the line. The only thing that's, I think the only reason that's the way it is right now is that oil companies are so hesitant to invest in Bitcoin mining and to risk anything on it. It's not just that they're hesitant or think it's risky. There's actually a lot more to it. So I had this one customer recently who had, they bought one unit. We had trialed two units with them for ages. They finally bought a unit. They love it. They're making good money right now in this market. They bought five more. And then we're halfway building them. And I got a call saying, look, like it went to the VP level. we can't mine Bitcoin. We have to be arm's length. Like they can't be doing it themselves because their insurance company gave them hell over it and they're risking their insurance relationship. Wow. That and probably the most important one, and this is why I'm so, call it batshit online about the fiat maxis. The fiat maxis, like, you know, they basically fund all these oil companies. They're creditors to these oil companies.
Yeah.
You can't piss off your creditors. Like, you can't piss off your shareholders and your creditors. So that's why, you know, I'm always preaching online, like, don't let the fiat maxis, like, take a piece of your company and don't let them, like, don't take credit for them because they're gonna censor you. So this company just got censored from mining Bitcoin. It was their executive decision, but they've effectively decided, like, it's too risky right now for us to participate in this based on our relationships. And that, I think, is the main thing driving most oil and gas companies from just doing it directly, because it makes so much sense for them to do it directly because of all the extra benefits they get beyond just mining Bitcoin.
Yeah, that's really interesting. There's no other really word for that besides just censorship, I guess. Like, I mean, that's kind of like a downer note to wrap up the conversation on, but I guess a more positive note might be the mobile off-grid future of mining is definitely something to look forward to and to focus on, instead of like the stationary brick and mortar on-grid data center type mining. But I mean, the industry will probably always have a blend of both. But in terms of flexibility and reacting to different regulatory changes and those sorts of risks, the mobile off-grid scene or infrastructure is much more friendly to that sort of dynamic.
I certainly hope I'm not being too much of a downer.
No, not at all. It's interesting and great to understand those sorts of risks.
Yeah, to me, those are the most interesting things, like, to discuss. Like, there's lots of good things happening, and there's going to be. I mean, I just think Bitcoin is going to do a lot of good for, say, American and Canadian, North American. Well, actually, globally, but because we're both American and Canadian, it's going to do a lot of good for both of our countries and for the people. So, I mean, there's plenty of good stuff happening, but there are. I think people are, I don't know what the word would be. They're underestimating some of the upcoming challenges. Like, I really hate seeing people say, oh yeah, Bitcoin's already won, and like this kind of thing. Like, sure, it's gonna win, but like not without a bit of pain. There's gonna be it's gonna be some challenges, but it's worth thinking about and trying to wrap your head around. That's why, like, you know, when these mining companies do, you know, posture themselves about their nice ESG profile, that's what gets me going, because it's like, look, like, you guys are really just, what you're ending up doing is you're supporting a regulatory attack, and you don't really need to do that. There's a lot of other things you can justify Bitcoin mining on beyond just, its cleanliness. So,
yeah, no, that's true. Well, Steve, thanks so much for your time. I love this chat. I know everyone listening will as well. And if they don't really care. But it's been a lot of fun talking about upstream and your experiences with natural gas mining, and sort of looking forward to the challenges and opportunities across a bunch of different vectors for Bitcoin mining. But thanks for your time. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, no problem. Anytime, Zach.
That's a wrap for us at the Compass Podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, please subscribe and consider leaving us a 5-star review on your preferred listening platform. Thanks again, everyone. The thoughts and opinions expressed by the hosts and guests on the Compass Podcast are their own and do not represent the opinions of Compass Mining, Inc. None of this content should be considered financial advice.